This is the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we have conversations with everyday martial artists about their histories and how martial arts influence their daily lives. You are listening to the abbreviated version of this podcast, which is the first 20 minutes or so of the show. Please consider supporting the show by subscribing on our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/MALMAG. And for about the price of one coffee shop coffee per month, you can get access to 4 new podcasts each month, 1 week before their YouTube release dates. You also have access to all of our existing shows, which at this point is about 100 hours of shows for you to enjoy. Individual shows can be purchased at our Gumroad page. That is malmag.gumroad.com. In this episode, I get on Zoom and I connect with a fellow Southern California martial artist, Steve Del Castillo. Steve is the creator and founder of Bunal Brand, and Steve is going to talk to us about how he got into martial arts, studying martial arts in the Philippines with some renowned Filipino martial arts masters, and some of the other martial arts stuff he does, including these amazing events. Sit back and enjoy. Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, and today I've got a special guest, someone very creative martial artist who does not only the martial arts, but he creates a wonderful product that many of us that are in the FMA use. He has a stick brand called, I'm always hoping I'm saying it right, Bunal?
Bunal.
Bunal. Bunal, yeah. Bunal brand. And great sticks, just pounding hands and choking necks last night with those things. They're really good. So this is Steve Del Castillo. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you for having me on board.
Yeah, absolutely. Been wanting to get you on here for a while. As you know, I get my wish list and try to get through it as much as I can. Fortunately, I put these out once a week and we don't record live. So it's nice. I can, you know, stockpile as soon as people are available.
That's great.
So let's start with, kind of how we start all of our superhero origin stories here, just with the beginning. How did you get involved in martial arts?
Shaw Brothers.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's funny how much of a common thing, especially for, if you don't mind, how old are you, Steve?
I'm in my 30 pluses. 30
okay.
plus 10, 30 plus.
Gotcha.
40, yeah, 40 plus.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in my 50s, and I found that it seems like everyone, probably my generation, the one before, and I think the one coming behind me, we're all very similar. We've all seen that, you know, Kung Fu Theater and Bruce Lee, and, you know, we've seen, and it's just like that has this amazing effect. So did you see those on television, or did you see them on video or in the theater?
Kung Fu Theater, Saturdays at noon or 11,
yeah,
whatever it was.
Exactly.
Yeah. And would not miss it for the world, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, planned your day.
Yeah, that's it. Would rather do that than go anywhere else. So
exactly. Did you have a particular favorite, like favorite film or favorite actors?
I like Philip Coe. He's the lizard from the 5 Deadly Venoms, and you know, all his characters, and yeah, the Deadly Venoms characters were my favorite, but everything was good. I appreciated everything that offered.
Wow. So how soon after watching that did you take up the actual practice?
My mom signed me up for backyard training with a wushu guy. Now thinking back on it and seeing a lot more, he was more kind of like Southern Chinese Hungar kind of guy, like reminiscing in all the moves that we've learned. But he was at the time doing a lot of tournaments and stuff. And then once a week he would come and train a group of us, and that was my first foray into martial arts.
Wow, that's cool. So you got to actually go from watching like Kung Fu Theater doing Kung Fu
Because a lot of, you know, before, like in the Midwest, we'd watch Kung Fu, but Kung Fu wasn't available. So we went to, you know, what was available, which for most people was karate or taekwondo. I don't regret it, but, you know, it was a little different where you're like, okay, I'm doing these karate moves. And then you're watching Kung Fu theater going, okay, now how do I make my hand like this praying mantis, you know, or whatever. And so it was kind of a, it was an interesting world to say the least, but that's cool that you kind of went from seeing, you know, the stuff on TV to doing actual like Chinese martial art.
Well, I appreciated a lot of Japanese stuff because, you know, being an impressionable like 13, 14 year old, I like ninjas back
then. Of course.
So yeah. So Sonny Chiba was a big fan of mine. I was a big fan of also.
So, wow.
Yeah. So yeah, I try to appreciate everything. And yeah, even though I you know, there was karate schools near us. I was growing up in Oxnard. There was Flores Brothers Kempo Karate that a lot of my friends went to, you know, probably half the city went there. So I ended up going.
Strong, that guy.
Huh?
Jesse Flores. He's still going strong. I see him like every Thursday.
Oh yeah. I know he goes and trains with you guys. Yeah. So yeah, my generation, they all, majority of people in high school went to Flores Brothers.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you did backyard. So you kind of were almost in this JKD mindset already.
If you want to associate backyard groups with, we were doing straight up Kung Fu. Nothing changed.
Right.
Traditional Wushu. Not so much the JKD mindset, but maybe the backyard group part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because there's that association generally made, you know, with backyard. Oh, it's JKD. And I kept thinking, well, you know, that was a lot of, when I was growing up, the same thing. You know, we did go to a school, like there was a karate school, but that was only, you know, 3 days a week. You had to train seven, you know, when you're a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the rest of the time it's in the backyard with some friends, you know.
Yeah.
Our basement.
or not, like, was that an hour a day? We did like 3 hours, three hours on Saturday. Yeah. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how long did you stay with that particular martial art?
So probably up until middle school. Once I got to middle schools, other things piqued my interest. You know, girls hanging out,
right?
All the way to high school. You know, so I pretty much didn't do anything martial arts related except get in fights between middle school and high school, that kind of stuff. And then after high school, I joined the military, the army, and then that was around the time when Bruce Lee the Dragon came out. Remember that with Jason Scott Lee? And I remember going to see it, and like, oh man, I'm here on this military base on my free times. What can I do? Oh, I think I'll take up martial arts again. So,
hey,
yeah.
Where were you stationed?
I was in Fort Stewart, Georgia at the time.
Okay.
And they had a lot of people who did martial arts. So it was a hodgepodge of different arts, people sharing. And, you know, there's a lot of karate. It's funny because there's a lot of people who would go to Sifu Francis Fong's in Atlanta and come back. And I would train with a guy doing Wing Chun, and he'd share with me what he learned, stuff like that. So,
wow. Well, that had to be a really interesting time with that because, you know, it's funny because that's what Guru Dan describes his military time like as well, which was, I believe, Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and how they would, I think the main commander was Slomansky, and Slomansky was the guy that gave Elvis his black belt, actually. So Slomansky was a big, big, well-known, at least within the circles at that time, karate guy. Like, he was a big guy, like 6'2", and he would, he was the trainer. I think he was actually the first hand-to-hand combat trainer of the SEALs when the SEALs were first commissioned by President Kennedy, too, in the early 60s. And I think he was the guy that created weight divisions and time limits in karate tournaments in Japan, because apparently, I
Oh,
guess
wow.
you went into a tournament in Japan in the day, and there was, say, 95 competitors. You fought 94 times. It wasn't like a three eliminated nation kind of thing, right? And there was no weight classes, so everyone had to fight this 6-foot-2 guy who apparently just, beat everybody. And they went, yeah, maybe we're going to reconsider how we how
Oh,
we
yeah.
rank this. And apparently, like, 95 guys over days too. It wasn't like, oh, you just went for, a Saturday afternoon to the All Valley tournament. It was, it was a few days of fighting, obviously with no pads. And I don't think they were obviously gouging eyes and kicking each other in the groin, but still, how it gets when you spar. It gets a little
Oh,
sluggy
yeah.
whether you're wearing pads or not. And
Yeah.
yeah, so Guru said, I guess, that Hank Szymanski would have different people. Like, if there was a guest guy in that was like a Tungsudo or Taekwondo expert, they would do Korean stuff. Or if the guy came in and he was Okinawan, they would do that. Or if another guy came in and it was, Japanese or through Chinese system or whatever. And so there was this great exchange where so they didn't really look at superiority of one art over another. It was just sort of, here's what we're doing. And it was all, I guess, clearly about sort of functionality at the time. So that seems pretty interesting. Was it
Yeah.
something like that?
Yeah, that was it. It was just people learning stuff and then just fighting, just seeing what works. So we are doing our own rudiments of JKD. Like, that's not going to work on me or stuff like that. Military kind of mindset. Like, we weren't really trying to apply it to warfare. We're just trying to see what works. And at that same time, UFC came out, like, was starting to come out too. Like, the
Right.
first. See? Yeah, so everybody was like, let's try that. It was like, let's go pick on the Tai Chi guys. Yeah. So there was a lot of that.
And that early UFC was so interesting. It was just like just insane brawling too. It's like, okay,
Yeah.
distinct style, and I'm 300 pounds lighter than the guy I'm about to go in. Fight. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, we were going to go watch it. That was in Mississippi at the time, I believe. Yeah. So we were like, hey, let's go over here, And my dad was in the Navy and he lived in Mississippi. So I was going to go stay with him, but I couldn't get the time out off to go and go watch that one. So, but yeah, imagine at that time you were doing martial arts at that time with Sifu Larry Hartzell, right? Around that time.
At the UFC period, no, I was actually in Florida at that time. So I was training with my first JKD and Kali instructor. His name's Lauren Bookminder.
Oh.
But no, we were watching that stuff with great interest, because before we were taking a real deep dive. I mean, we were doing JKD Kali, and we started taking a big deep dive into Muay Thai at the time, because we were lucky. There was a couple Thai nationals that had come in. And they were making it, available for us to start up. And then it turns out too that one of Lauren's childhood friends was a guy by the name of Doug Pandorf. And Doug was one of Ajahn Chah's main guys at the time. He operated a school out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. And he was one of the guys that was helping Ajahn instruct his instructor camps at the time. And
Oh,
so
okay.
we brought him in. And I swear to God, man, I've never had a workout that made me more sore without lifting weights. Like, the next day after a 2-day seminar with Doug, I felt like I had lifted more weights than I should have. Like, I couldn't stand up straight because my psoas muscles were so sore. And like, my lats were killing me. Like, I'd been doing rows all day, but I'd
Yeah.
been doing clinch work with a guy that was my size as well. So it's like, I was doing
Yeah.
rows with, a 200-pound guy. So I can't.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, I was thoroughly convinced with at least the conditioning aspect of Muay Thai at that point. And
Yeah.
so yeah, we were watching. I had found a video store in the Tampa area that was run by a Thai family. And so I remember going in there and asking them for Thai boxing. And they're looking at me like, Thai boxing? I said, yeah, you know, Muay Thai. And they go, you're interested in that? And like, well, yeah, we have some in the back. And I'm like, well, can I rent? You know, like they were having to rent me some fight tapes. It was kind of cool. So we watched a lot of that. And so, yeah, when the UFC thing came on, we were kind of watching that with great interest. And we're going, okay, what is this jiu-jitsu stuff? And why is this guy having such an easy time, like running across the ring and literally putting these guys on the ground? And I had very limited wrestling experience at the time. And I'm looking at it going, wow, these guys are really bad at takedown defense. But,
yeah.
And I'm not armchairing it because I'm like, I don't think I'm any better, but you know, I can recognize it that, wow, that's a weakness.
We were looking at all the military guys that signed up for UFCs every time when I was still in the military. Oh, here, this guy, he's a Ranger. I got his ass kicked. You know, whenever they had UFCs, I remember there was guys with military background in the first one, and they got their asses handed to them. So every UFC after that we watched, oh, let's see what this guy does, or some of the guys, oh, I know that guy, this and that. So it's really interesting. But then that, for me, it was like, this is like sport fighting in a sense.
Right.
And it's like not combat, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's, and one of my captains told me at the time, like kind of laughed at it. As soon as he goes, remember this, as soon as you get in that position there, just yell out and your Ranger buddy's going to come up and shoot that guy. And that's how you end it. Yeah. So.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I did see a thing. It was a video. It was probably, I guess, a bit of a documentary about it. And it was about some UFC guys going in and training. I think it was Marine Corps. And they were doing war games like that. And you did see, you know, these guys like grab a guy and pull guard. You had another three guys come up and basically hit him with the padded whatever that simulates, I guess, a rifle and bayonet.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, I think you just took two bayonets to the head there.
But so, before Gracie combatives revolutionized the hand-to-hand fighting of the military, I remember my captain came back from a hand-to-hand combat course. And he said all it was being able to grab the enemy, hold him to the ground until your friend comes and they can shoot him. I was like, that's all it was. They're just like, yeah, that was the main part of it. Because the general military, their thing was you're with people. So get a partner. And you hear, you know, I don't know how it is nowadays, but a lot of people who train in that, like knife stuff, they're kind of specialized and they do it on their own.
Right.
But back then that was the training. A lot of the training that my captain was telling me is like, yeah, all we did was try to subdue the opponent and hold them at bay until your friend can come and shoot them or stab them and help you. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Certainly. Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's environment, you know, it's one of those many elements that, when you look at reality, quote unquote, combat, you know, what is the situation? What is the goal? And, you know, when you're looking at military, yeah, you're a team, you know, generally it's rare that you have, you know, one guy going out and do something is usually what, a spy or a saboteur or something, but even the saboteurs tend to work in teams. So, you know, you don't generally have one guy unless he's a reconnaissance, you know, one guy might be reconnaissance. But it's a team. So, you know, that's a whole different dynamic to train. And martial art, for the most part, the way most of us train it, it's individual, one against one or one against a couple, maybe. But it's rare that we sort of train that way. Unless you are specifically doing that kind of military thing, then it makes sense, you know.
It's
smart that they were at least looking at it that way.
Yeah. That reminds me of a fight I had in high school. And like, I was beating this guy. And then I look up and his brother pulled up with all their friends.
Oh, no.
No, but this is the thing, you know, the brother grabbed me, and I thought I'd have to fight all their friends. Picked me up and said, "You beat up my brother. Good, good for you. The fight's over." And I was like, "Okay, thank you." You know, so he respected that it was a one-on-one match, and he didn't feel the need for how him and his friends to pummel me. You know, so I felt really lucky at that time. You know,
yeah. You know, kind of an interesting old bro code in a way. You know, like you had your fight. He come along and said, "Okay, one on one." But at the same time, he's like, "Okay, you've beat him. That's enough." You know.
Yeah.
So that's actually very cool and very lucky.
So that's probably what took me a while to get into jiu-jitsu. Seeing that, like, that was always in my mindset because of that experience and the military experience. So that's what it was.
Well, okay, so you're in jiu-jitsu then.
I've been doing it for a while. But I think I'm known more for my FMA than.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
But dude, I want to shoot off on this tangent. I didn't know you did jiu-jitsu. So actually, talk about that a little bit. So what made you finally say, "Yes, okay, I want to do this"?
Jiu-jitsu?
Uh-huh.
I started getting rid of a lot of my FMA baggage. Being part of organizations, not having to deal with bringing teams to tournament, you know, that kind of stuff. And this is right before I was already a blue belt at the time, and I was just kind of like hanging out with one of Eric Paulson's instructors, Danny Suarez. And then he had me teach FMA at his studio. And then here I am, like 10-year blue belt, seeing guys start off as white. They're moving on, moving on. I'm like, what the hell am I doing? I got time now.
Right.
So let me just dive deeper into it. I know enough because I know a lot of people who go at the Inosano. You could clarify this for me. If you're most people are just blue belts and everything, and they put it together, right? It, you know. That's the general consensus with they're just good enough in a lot of different things, and then they can expand on their own. So as far as jiu-jitsu, I was kind of like that. Like blue belt is kind of good enough. It gives me an idea how to be on the ground and get back up. I don't need to go into that until my buddy comes and stabs.
Right.
No, but I kind of like, okay, I feel good at blue belt enough where I can just get up. I don't have to engage on the ground. I could get away, you know, that kind of stuff. So, but at that time, I was like, you know what? Let me step deeper into it. I got the time. Let me appreciate it more. So that's what got me into there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And this concludes the abbreviated version of the podcast. Please consider supporting the program by going to www.patreon.com/MALMAG and subscribing to the show. You can also purchase this individual episode or any individual episode at our Gumroad page. That's MALMAG.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Steve Del Castillo. Coming up next week, another one of my Inosanto Academy compatriots, an artist as well as a martial artist, Alex Peck. Our Malmag online store at martialartslifestylemagazine.com has a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Krabiker Bong. Timmy B's brand now selling in Japan as well. Beautiful Timmy B's brand shirts and Dos Manos shirts are available, with new t-shirt designs and more products coming soon. An online course in the Dos Manos method for FMA is available under the Courses tab. More courses coming soon. Check out the Places to Train tab to find schools near you, and click on the Events calendar page to see what seminars and events are happening all around the world. And of course, visit our main page for articles on the martial arts. Music by Jack L. Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.